This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Hey, Schanowski, I heard what you said.
Mark Schanowski.
I've seen a handful of different times where there was video of him lighting up Jamokes in pickup games.
NBC Sports Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host.
What the hell? Fans locked out on the right hand.
That's Mr. Carter to you.
The most interesting man in the world.
I'm coming for you, man. You heard it here first.
Mark Schanowski with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Mark Schanowski's on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. You can see him at NBC Sports Chicago as your Bulls host, and he joins us now on the Bernstein and McKnight show. The Bulls fall again, this time to the Lakers without LeBron James. And I'm not sure what conclusions to draw from what I was able to see last night before I had to hit the hay. What was meaningful to you?
Well, I think the most fun was at the end when they denied the L.A. fans the free tacos by getting to 100. They scored 21 points in the last couple of minutes and got to 100. Obviously, it has no impact on the long-term rebuild, but that was at least fun to watch for those who stayed until the bitter end. As far as the bulk of the game, though, you know, same issues, issues on transition defense, confusion on options on offense. You know, there's problems all over the court, and, you know, when you put your finger in the dike to plug one, there's a hole that's, you know, spout somewhere else. So just a team that is, you know, your classic NBA struggling team, problems all over the court and no apparent answers right now.
It still feels, Mark, like Jim Boylan is trying to strangle out Lauri Markkanen with how he's trying to use him on offense. It's just, I mean, I was watching the second quarter and he got a touch early and got a shot up in some, you know, ISO low block kind of thing. Like they'll spread four to the other side of the floor and let Lauri kind of work his thing. And I didn't see him touch the ball offensively for another 6, 7, 8 minutes. I mean, it felt like forever. How is that developing the young core? How is Lauri Markkanen supposed to be used in this offense that he's not getting to his spot, or that he's not making shots that he wants to, or shooting shots that he wants to shoot?
Well, most of the plays that they run involving Lauri involve him setting a screen up near the top of the key, and then he pops out for a three-point shot, or else there's some misdirection where the ball is on one side, and then they run a screen where Lauri gets a three on the other side. It's really kind of a shame for a guy that's that athletic at 7 feet tall to use him basically as a standstill shooter, and that's kind of his role in this offense right now. And most of it's on the structure of the offense, but part of it too is on Lauri himself. He's you know, he bragged in the summer about how he put on 15 pounds of muscle and he was going to be able to punish smaller defenders in the post. He has to demand the ball in the post. He has to get his butt down there, and when he gets the opportunity, he has to score. We saw a couple occasions last night where even when he got the ball down deep, he would do the Dirk step back and fall away instead of trying to shoot right over a guy who's 5, 6, 7 inches shorter than he is. Lowry's still learning how to play in the post, and that's something that a skill that he's going to have to acquire if he's going to reach the potential that the Bulls and everyone else is hoping he will.
Is Jim Boylan seeing what you're seeing? These things seem so obvious to us, but this is there's some of these inefficient shots are a part of his offense, and I'm not sure if the way we view something as a good or bad shot is the way the Bulls are currently.
Well, what happens when a team is struggling, you know, now they have an 8-game losing streak, and I think that a lot of times you get situations where guys are just looking for their turn, and I saw a lot of that last night, where players would just decide, hey, I haven't shot in a while, it's my turn to shoot. Zach had a really poor game last night. He took some really questionable shots, and in the second half, he kind of really took himself right out of it mentally and wasn't a factor at all in the game. Chris Dunn at times will just drive into the paint with no apparent end game in mind and either make a bad decision going to the rim or turn the ball over. And I think what happens is guys just start looking around and saying, it's my turn, and now Jabari is back in the rotation, and he's going to take his shots when they present themselves. So it's really not a recipe for development when you have a number of individuals thinking that, you know, it's a my-turn system, and you're not going to get much accomplished in the NBA unless you're the Golden State Warriors, who have premier talent.
Chris Dunn is 8 of 27 from the field in his past three games. I was just reading that in a Darnell Mayberry piece. And I wonder, you know, you mentioned his kind of meandering possessions, driving to the lane and going nowhere. Boylan pulled him last night in the second and fairly early on in the second in favor of Ryan Arcidiacono. Do you, I worry some because of the little mutiny that happened early
just
on.
A little bit.
I worry about those kind of disciplinary actions in games, even if they're warranted, coming back to bite a guy that had players turn on him after he wanted him to run suicides.
Well, in the pregame show last night, we decided, you know, the way things are going, we'd have a little bit of fun. And we ran a clip from the Meet the Parents film with the Robert De Niro character talking about the circle of trust. And that's really what it's become. You have to be in Jim Boylan's circle of trust in order to see the floor and to be used in a meaningful way. And now Robin Lopez is out of the circle of trust, and he'll sit at the end of the bench and kind of scowl on the baseline. And you've got Jabari Parker back in for who knows how long, until I'm sure they're trying to showcase him for a possible trade. He'll pull guys. You know, Wendell Carter Jr. has been yanked early in games because the coach didn't like the way, like his mental edge. Chris Dunn, as you mentioned, pulled last night because he wasn't doing things exactly the way that the coach had wanted. And, you know, this is framed under the guise of creating a new culture and showing guys that they have to do things the way the coach expects them to do in order to see the court. And that is that's what they've basically given Jim Boylan the mission to do, is to create a culture to teach these young guys that they have to earn their playing time. And that's all well and good, but sometimes it seems to be done in a haphazard way, and then you wonder if the message is really being sent, if guys are moving in and out of that circle of trust.
It's arbitrary and random, and then when they're out there, I don't claim to be super conversant in NBA analytics, but I do understand when you look at some of these heat maps about where the efficient shots are taken, that where teams are looking to score more points than their opponent. There's bad areas on the floor. There are little slack water areas where two-point field goals are made, often contested two-point field goals. And it seems like Bulls players are finding the worst spots to be in at the worst times. Late in the shot clock, in these inefficient, contested two areas, occasionally two guys in the same spot. This is not hard, and this is not advanced stuff. If I'm noticing it, there have to be people on that bench, there have to be people in the organization wondering what the plan is to have the Bulls do smarter things offensively, things that make sense. And when do they get to do that?
Well, one thing that's become abundantly clear during the state game losing streak is they don't have any three-point shooting. You know, they traded Justin Holiday to Memphis, and even though his percentage wasn't great, he was a fairly efficient three-point shooter, and now they're trying to get that from Lowry and to a lesser extent from Zach LaVine. And you know, they're just not, in all the losses, they're getting outscored by such a wide margin from the three-point line that it's almost impossible to make that up in other areas. You know, they talk about trying to dominate points in the paint and get to the free throw line, but 3 points is always better than two, and in today's NBA, just about every team has two or three above-average three-point shooters, and the Bulls at this point don't have any. And that's something, when you look ahead to the summer and possible trades and free agency, they've got to add some shooting because it's something that's really been dragging them down. And as you said, too often late in the shot clock, you've got the ball in either Zach or Lowry's hands, and they're inside the arc, and they're forced to take a contested two, which, as we all know, is the worst shot in basketball right now.
Some of this is on the guys on the floor, I think. And in two more shot clock violations last night against the Lakers, one of them is definitely on, I believe it's Markkanen. He just kind of gets lost at the top of the free throw line extended and just isn't looking around for a shot. Is some of that to you confusion in what they're being asked to do? Is there a checkout factor there? What of the shot clock violations?
Well, I think the system is pretty clear. You know, they're trying to play old school inside out basketball, getting it in the post and cutting off the big man, which, you know, in today's NBA is almost archaic. And what that's going to happen if you don't get anything off the initial actions, shot clock's going to run under 10, and then you're kind of scrambling to get a usable shot, especially since Wendell Carter Jr. at this point in his development really is a little bit wary to try to create his own shot in the low post. So you've got a lot of possessions that kind of get bogged down, and then what ends up happening is you throw the ball out to the guard or you throw it out to Lowry, and they're forced to try to create something with the shot clock running down on them. So, you know, one of the things we talked about in the postgame show was that they did outscore the Lakers in fast break points yesterday, 23-15. They've got a young group of athletes out there on the floor. They need to run more to create more easy opportunity baskets, because with the current roster and with what they're being asked to do, that's their best way to stay in games, is to try to get some steals, try to get in the open court and score on the fast break before the defense sets up. And I think that's something we'll see more of in the coming weeks.
What's the latest on the trade front for either Robin Lopez or Parker?
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to find a trade for Robin Lopez. He's making $14.3 million, and they don't want to take any money back that extends beyond this year. So I think Lopez will be with the team in this role where he's just kind of watching from the sideline until the February 7th trade deadline passes. And then I think they will, honor him as a veteran who's been a good soldier and buy him out, let him go to hopefully kind of try to jump on with a contending team. The Jabari thing now is getting a little bit more interesting because, we all know about his defensive deficiencies, but in the last two games that he's had a chance to play, he's looked pretty good. He scored 29 points over the last two games. He's scored in a variety of ways, and I think there's a lot of teams that would like to add that one more piece for the playoffs, or in the situation where some teams are looking to get rid of expiring contracts and might want something different. There was speculation about a three-way trade involving the Knicks and the Sacramento Kings. The Knicks are desperate to get off Enes Kanter. Sacramento is thinking they might have a chance to make the playoffs. They may take Kanter as a guy who can score. The Bulls could get back some combination of Zach Randolph and Kosta Kufis, which would do nothing for you on the court, but it would find Jabari a new home.
Wendell wow. Carter's thumb, is that a thing we ought to be worried about here for the young man, or are we hearing that that's more of just a precautionary situation?
Yeah, at this point, it's just precautionary, but anybody who's played basketball, you got a sprained thumb, sprained fingers, it's tough to play at 100% efficiency, but the great thing about being 19 is you heal pretty quickly. So, the thought is I think he's going to be okay. Right now, they got to find a way to scratch out a win. They play at Cleveland Monday on the Martin Luther King holiday. So that's their chance to get in the win column, because right now, we heard about the scrap with Robin Lopez and Chris Dunn in practice the other day. And I think that was mostly a product of Lopez finding out before practice he was out of the rotation and just took out some of his frustrations. But anytime a team is on a long losing streak and their prospects don't look good, you worry about, things like that happening. And right now the onus on the coaching staff is to try to find a way to get a win, to try to play at a faster pace, and hopefully get a happier group of guys to take the court.
Mark, thank you.
All right, we've got the game tomorrow. They're in Denver to close out the trip via 7:30 pregame on NBC Sports Chicago. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night.
That is Mark Schanowski, always candid Bulls opinions.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.